Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, it's Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com, FamilyPetAncestry.com, AllThingsComedy.com/StopTalkingJackie. Here's the thing, folks. I'm on the internet. I don't know if you know that. And you can listen to it on a player. You can listen to it on iTunes. You can review the show on iTunes. I was just reading them. I forgot that there's ways to review the show on iTunes. And so I was just reading them. They're awesome. Thank you so much. It is a beautiful week. Let's do the credits. Mike Rickberg composed and sang that song that you just heard, the Dork Forest theme song. He will sing his lyrics to the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of this program. Patrick Brady, gonna fix this audio, and I bless him for it. What the heck? And, Vilmos, he does my website, JackieCation.com, which has a donation button on it, as does DorkForest.com, where you can donate directly to the Dork Forest. If you enjoy the program, feel free to send me $100 a year. That's a super fan. All you get is a thank you note. You can order stuff if you want, but I totally appreciate it. If you love the show, I would love to get a donation from you, is what I'm saying. And if you can't donate, that's fine. Just talk it up. Repost it. Tell your peoples, your minions, if you have minions. And you can order stuff at JackieCation.com. You can use the Amazon banner at JackieCation.com, where you go through the portal to Amazon, and then you place your order, and I get a taste of that. Doesn't cost you any more money. The merch, of course, is all my CDs and my new DVD CD. You can get that in either DVD or CD form. This will make an excellent Horcrux. Critically acclaimed. Top 10 comedy specials of the year on Vulture.com last year. And you can download it for $5 if you don't need a hard copy or don't want to see the DVD bonus 3-minute thing. But you can download it at allthingscomedy/JackieCation. I think that's all lowercase, by the way, Jackie Cation. So, but you can get t-shirts, Ranger t-shirts, Dork Forest t-shirts, and stand-up comedy. I'm doing stand-up comedy all over the place. This week, I'm going to be at Wise Guys in Salt Lake City, the West Valley Wise Guys, and I'm going to do a live Dork Forest that Thursday night with a guy named Carrie, who has his own podcast called The Geek Podcast, and we're going to talk. It's going to be a super nerd event, in Salt Lake City, April 2nd, I think it is. This is the last episode of March. Let's do the ad. This month's ad is all about Jenny Bergman. Jenny Bergman has, and Leslie, and their mother founded a beautiful toy store in the Upper West Side of Manhattan called West Side Kids. And it's West_Side_Kids on Twitter. And West Side Kids has got awesome toys. I get the costumes and I get the musical instruments for my nieces and nephews because I don't have children, and you can have a loud child around you and I can just hand them off. This has been the longest intro ever, so let's get into the show. It's a good one. You will enjoy. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm in my living room with Shane Moss, ladies and gentlemen. Shane Moss.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks. Here we are. It's
me.
At Shane Comedy on the Twitter.
Yeah.
S-H-A-N-E,
yeah.
And then www.shanemoss.com, M-A-U-S-S. German?
Yes.
Because you're from Milwaukee.
Well, I'm from La Crosse, Wisconsin, other side of the state.
Other side of the state.
Where are you from again?
I'm from outside of Milwaukee. I was just there.
Okay.
Visiting
yeah.
my dad, who refuses to die. And God love him. God love him for not dying.
How old is he?
78.
What's killing him?
Well, he just had a bunch of surgeries. Nothing was killing him before he had all these surgeries. And now he is... it's funny about all the surgeries because he had three horrible surgeries where they had to crack his chest open 3 times. And then 6-8 weeks ago, turned around too fast. So he gets out of the... He lives through all of it. Doesn't think he's going to. Gets out of the hospital, turns around too quick, breaks his hip and leg. So now has just gotten out of the hospital about 2 weeks ago.
And can't walk. And
no, he's better now because he spent 6 weeks in the hospital. Mm. The only guy who misses the hospital because there's free coffee. It's all he's entirely Wisconsin, like, well, you know, they just kept bringing me stuff. And then there was bingo and I got to play cards with guys. And Yeah, he never knew about his mortality. I genuinely believe that until this year.
I recently went through some surgeries myself.
That's right. You're limping around. How long's that been going on?
Since May 25th is when I originally broke both of my feet hiking, my heels.
You broke your heels hiking?
Yeah. Yeah. I jumped off of something that was too high.
And just wiped out.
It was a buddy's idea. I shouldn't even say that because it's
Henry Phillips.
It was ultimately my decision. Henry Phillips, in a way, made me do it, I feel like.
I wonder if I never met Henry Phillips. You know that he broke his leg jumping over like one of those velvet cords at the improv?
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he just jumped out. He was like, I'm going to do this because I'm 17. No, you aren't. I'm so sorry.
Just jumping over a cord? No, yeah, I was doing some pretty intense stuff.
Like feet? Like more than 1 foot?
Yeah, I was like 12 feet up there. And
wow. And then, too many movies. Too many movies, man.
Yeah. Well, I was rock climbing a lot at the time.
Okay.
And what it really was I was in the best shape of my life, and I was just like, I had way too much confidence.
That's a lot of confidence.
And I was freshly single, too. Which,
right. You're like, I'm going to prove that I am. I can do anything I want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That risk-taking, all the evolutionary psychology and biology stuff, it makes a lot of predictions about that kind of stuff, which I know.
Right, because let's get into it. You want to just dork out?
Sure.
It's already,
we can
you're
dork
like, we only
right
have
away.
An hour. We only,
no,
you're like,
no,
you said
it's,
you could...
it's totally fine. I mean, I'm interested in all this stuff because I went through, because it all, I mean, I'm interested
in connected?
Learning about life. It's all connected.
There we go, and, Shane Moss. Let's do it. So I got this. I said, I really dork out about evolutionary psychology and biology.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, that sounds made up, but what isn't really in the world? What isn't made up? What is evolutionary psychology? What the hell? I have a definition.
I could take a stab at it.
Let's do it. Let's see how you match Wikipedia.
So much like people think about evolution as maybe humans standing upright or losing a tail or getting imposable thumbs and all of these physical things.
Right.
There has also been a lot of psychological. Our brains have also evolved.
Oh, right.
And there's been numerous.
Oh, that sounds totally real. That sounds
processes.
Completely and entirely real. I am wrong.
Yeah. So it's something that. Evolutionary psychology is a rather new-ish field in the sciences. It's around 1970s. It started kind of gaining some traction more. And
so everybody was interested in evolution, the physical part of it, from Darwin on, which is, what, 1848?
Sounds about right. Right around there.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
But 1970, people are like, I wonder if the brain also developed.
But I mean, even Darwin was saying stuff like that in his books. It's just that stuff wasn't gaining traction for a long time.
You can't see it.
Right, right. It's just a lot harder to understand. And then there was a lot of stuff with mating and everything early on, and there was all these other weird reasons why it didn't take off, which was evolutionary psychology kind of predicts that females in most species will kind of end up calling the shots.
Dun, dun, dun. When will it happen?
As far as selecting a partner.
Oh, okay.
And not running the world necessarily or whatever.
Sure,
like,
sure.
I understand.
Not allowed to vote for themselves.
Right.
But in like going, you yes, you no.
Yeah. And guys are a bit more toward the trying to get selected. In most species.
Right.
And with humans, it's definitely, there's a lot more of a balance. But because most scientists were males.
Right.
Back then.
And couldn't get laid.
And probably
like,
couldn't get
why.
Laid.
That's
yeah.
why I'm not getting laid.
And it was, it was this idea that, and it always looked like animals, males were like on top. So it's like, well, the men are in charge here.
Okay.
And they're doing, and the idea that females had any, control in this,
right?
And we're driving how we shaped our lives and everything was very controversial for a very long time until women started getting in the field.
Okay,
and that helped evolutionary psychology. But it's not just about sex; it's about lots of other stuff.
Right? Because when you watch animals, you see sort of like the male plumagey kind of thing where you're just like, no, no, I'm the one. And then guys like deer will fight. Like there's a fight thing. And
so everything's very reasonable.
Right. It feels like it makes some sort of, or it
no,
resonates.
I mean, until mating season.
Oh, and, oh.
Like the rest of the year, everything's like, everyone's kind of keeping to themselves.
Right.
They're off. They're eating their food. They're looking for predators, whatever it might be.
Right.
And then mating season comes.
And everyone goes bananas.
There's just everything goes completely crazy.
Okay.
And kind of the logic behind why that happens is very fascinating.
What is the logic behind that?
So the...
Because it's got to be speculative, right? Initially?
Well, a little bit. I mean, I guess everything is, but...
Sure. Well, initially, everything. I mean, you gotta speculate to figure out. And then you have an hypothesis, and then you test your theorem.
And they're getting to be pretty well-tested ideas, but I think that the kind of the original idea of survival of the fittest, which is something that came not out of Darwin's mouth, but out from... interpretations of what he had written.
Interesting.
And because Darwin noticed this sexual selection stuff right away, with the peacock and the large plumage is actually the go-to standard, one of the classic great examples of the sexual selection stuff. And the idea being that, like, we all kind of get, like, okay, you have to survive long enough. We get why that would evolve. But when you're thinking about the big picture, the huge scope of things, it's about change over generations, and how that is determined is through reproduction.
Okay.
And really, there's a lot of things that, and this is getting into more of, like, the evolutionary biology side of things. One of, like, the darker, depressing aspects is that that life doesn't care a whole lot about you after you've reproduced.
Oh, okay. They're willing to kill you once you've created life, like the next generation.
Yeah, yeah.
To some extent? What's an example of that?
An example is, how is something like... cancer or something like that still kicking around? How hasn't it been weeded out of the gene pool if it's so bad for survival and heart disease and all of this stuff? And one of the big ideas about this is just that you've expended all this energy early in your youth and everything goes into reproducing and having the most offspring, which is called inclusive fitness. Is like the number of offspring and kind of how well off those offspring are is called inclusive fitness. So
let's talk to Jim Gaffigan and David Koechner. Those guys each have 5 kids apiece.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy talk.
So they're doing way better than I am.
I guess. And myself. Are you kidding?
And then better and worse, you're not supposed to say that. That's another whole tricky thing. Things just kind of happen. And some of them lead to more proliferation and some don't. And it would be difficult to say, like, one thing is better and one thing. And things can change all the time. Sometimes being a tall species in tall grass can be good because you can see more stuff. And then all of a sudden a new predator is introduced into the environment and those things get caught. And all the short ones of that species end up hiding in the grass.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's very difficult to ever say something's better or worse.
When you look at a big enough picture, I suppose you couldn't.
Right.
Just because... you don't know how it's going to change.
You can say it like in hindsight.
Oh, sure.
Like this was kind of good for this environment at that time, but going forward, it's near impossible to say.
Right. That is so. But I interrupted you, and I, for the love of God, I can't remember what it was.
Sexual selection, I think. Yeah. So this idea of sexual selection is the idea that reproducing. Reproduction is. I feel like I'm really giving a lecture here.
Oh my gosh! The thing is I know so little about this. You're gonna. It's gonna be a bit of a lecture.
This is. I'm dorking out right.
Like, this is the perfect.
Few people will listen to me as I try to.
I know what I wanted to backtrack a bit, Bill. Is you were talking about cancer. And why cancer was such a why it's still knocking around?
Yeah, it's kind of a mind blowing idea. This idea that after you've reproduced and raised your offspring to an age,
that's nice if
you can like kind of be a grandmother, and not that you should get cancer necessarily, but it's more that any mistake in the genes that would lead to cancer wouldn't be caught and got out of the gene population in time for it to be noticed.
Right.
Because you will have already reproduced.
Okay.
And that whatever
that does
genes
that,
or
once
effects,
you extrapolate on that, that does get depressing because you're like, children get cancer. They didn't get a chance to reproduce. It's like, well, too big, and we got to kill them, is what evolution says to that. And it's so weird because... But on the for the most part, I guess cancer does sort of come when you're older.
Yeah, and it being, I mean, so there's also kids die in all sorts of different ways.
Right, children are constantly dying. I'm so sorry. Hello, Rangers. How's it going out there? Sorry to bring it up.
Kids are always dying. But for the most part, with those diseases, yeah, they're quite resilient and they hang around until. And there's all sorts of, I mean, speaking of that, there's also mind-blowing ideas about, like, life histories. They found that people that live in areas where the lifespan is lower,
right,
females will become fertile earlier. They'll go through puberty
earlier.
And younger men will go through puberty early on. And
so that they can chop and get to it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Because in this environment, we don't have a whole lot of time.
Yeah, there's not a lot of time.
And here, you better get cranking out those
exactly
those babies.
Get cranking. That's a dick joke. Nope. No, it isn't. I just made it one. Anyway, so it's but yeah, that's well, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then if you look at it that way, then how has psychology been kind of optimized to when should we take risks, when shouldn't we, that sort of thing. Like I just got on my podcast, I just got done talking with a guy about he studies these little squirrel-like things on an island in Australia.
Okay.
They're called quolls, I believe. They're adorable. These guys have the females last for about 3 years.
Okay.
And the males, what happens is their growth rate, they reach full development around, I think it was 10 months or something like that.
Okay.
And then they just sprint around, and he put like GPS tracking devices on them and stuff on this. And the females kind of stay in one area and just like, oh, the food's
good here.
Right,
they go to the same restaurants and the same bars. And they're
Spend a bunch of energy running around and taking chances in new environments and everything?
Right, they know the neighborhood.
They know the lay of the land.
Sure.
They know right where all the food is. Mm-hmm. But males, once they become fertile in this first season, they run all over the place. They run just all over the island.
Having sex with as many or just one?
Yeah, trying to find as many as they can.
Okay.
And so the kind of psychology behind this is that sperm is cheap and plentiful, and
and
eggs are a lot more costly, and there's a lot more development going on, and you basically
there's certainly more work involved with the gestating and the birthing.
Yeah.
So the value is the psychology of that is that the value is put on the females. Because of that.
Right. And offspring are very taxing. And basically, if anything you can do to limit that cost, you can.
Did he mention how long the babies stay with the mother?
Oh, so this is, I'm getting off topic a little bit and going in and out of this. But so just, I'll get to like the punchline of his research and then explain. so basically, And this is getting into how the stress response works, which is basically your stress response is like fight or flight. Hey, let's shut down the immune system. Let's shut off the sex drive. Let's shut off everything we don't need right now.
Right.
And let's get the hell out of here. Let's power everything.
It's like
these glucocorticoids that pull everything out of your fat cells and then power your legs. And then let's get the hell out of here.
Okay.
And then afterwards, your digestive system will come back and everything else. Well, these guys enter this high state stressed response and just burn themselves out looking for puss, basically.
Right.
And then running all over the place. And then they have sex with as many females as they can, and they basically screw themselves to death.
Oh, really? They just keep going until
they're dead. They just keep boning
until they die.
Yep, 10 months, then they reproduce, then they go around for like 2 months trying to bone as much as they can, and
right?
Then all their organs are shot, and salmon have a similar thing that they do where they power everything, getting up the stream, and they're getting past grizzly bears and everything else, and then they die after they lay the eggs, and that has to do with their immune system having deteriorated. And
I forgot to mention, your podcast is called Here We Are, and you interview scientists and you talk about the meaning of life with guests. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's on iTunes and everything. Is it herewear.com?
Herewearepodcast.com.
There we go. And you also have a comedy special on Netflix right now called Mating Season.
Yep.
So people should watch that as well, because you're very funny. I enjoy the works of Shane Moss.
Thank you.
And
I'm recording a new album in April in Madison, speaking of Wisconsin.
Oh, at the State Street Comedy Club?
Yeah. How great is that place?
That's great. I just tried to text that woman to see if I could come back, and I have the wrong telephone number. So maybe...
Oh, I'll help you.
Yeah, you might be able to help me out.
Oh, yeah. they must love you there, I'm sure.
They like me, but I've only been once.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. But I do... That's where I started doing stand-up comedy at the dad.
Yeah,
he owned the
Gus.
Club.
Yeah.
And Gus owned the club where I started doing stand-up in 84.
Oh, wow.
And that building burned down, and we had the greatest conversation about it. He was like, hey, yeah.
That's a terrible Gus accent. Impression, rather.
I do a lot of accents. I don't know. You should hear my Louis Lee Chinese from Acme. It's a lot like this. And but the thing about Gus, I was like, well, the good news is that the club was insured. And Gus looks at me and says, not by me. And I was like, oh, he said, yeah, I lost a bunch of money. And I let the silence stretch a little bit. And I go, seems to have worked out, Gus. Because the guy owns most of State Street.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, yeah, it's worked out. It's
fine.
Yeah, that's my Gus impression. Gus is Greek.
That was a perfect Greek impression. Yeah. An old Greek man.
I can nail the Greek immigrant voice. Sure, that's not it. And but you're taping a new album in Madison?
Yeah. And it's all about kind of what I went through breaking my feet, but then how I kind of take a scientific examination at, through
comedy
some of
gold,
the
man. Comedy gold.
Yeah, yeah.
Feet breaking. That's crazy. Okay, now I have a mating question, not your own. So if the squirrels are going around screwing everybody,
but the females last for 3 years.
Right. So
and the reason being is they're only having like a litter. A male in one season, if he puts all his energy in, because life's unpredictable, they might not make it 3 years anyway.
Right.
They could bone all sorts of ladies because it's just a little sperm and then they're outie.
Right.
Females, they have to raise this.
Yeah.
They have to carry them for
however long the gestation process is.
And raise them for a little while, nurse them, whatever it may be. And
so they can get out and get some action.
Yeah, and then they got to start again and do the same thing again. So by sticking around for a little longer, they can increase the number of offspring. There's all these optimized things built into kind of the psychology of
what's the think system of the squirrels, of these squirrel like animals? Is that what the study of the it's called evolutionary biology?
So basically what's happening is like it kind of, when you think about evolution and when you look in hindsight, it looks very much like these things are thinking and like calculating numbers and everything else. But what's happened in actuality is that over time, something that had a little instinct to do something one way.
Right.
Just
either it worked
happened.
Out or didn't work out.
Like a good example is females look for, in turkeys, they're trying to figure out what the hell females are looking for because they can't, sometimes they like a big chest, sometimes they like this big plumage.
Bitches, man. What are you going to do?
Yeah,
you can't tell.
What are you going to do? Because the males, mind you, will
are looking for an orifice.
Quite literally. They take a foam ball and like a head and tail feathers and make like just a horrible female to see if it will maybe be a little pickier.
Yeah.
And they'll still be like, well, I'm going to try. And then they'll take the tail feathers and like crook them 90 degrees and to be like, well, this is like a mutant.
Yeah.
lady, and they'll take a little while longer and look and be like, well, I'll still give it a shot. And then they'll take the feathers and put
it's
it by
my
the
responsibility.
Head.
Responsibility, yeah.
And then they'll look for a little while longer, like, well, I've never seen anything like this. Where do I stick it? And then they're like, well, they'll try anyway. And the only way you can get these things to stop boning is to, like, take the tail feathers and stick them over here and take the head and stick it 20 feet away. And then they're like, oh, I better not mess with that.
That's just a ball.
Yeah.
That's just a ball with an orifice. I am not going to actually screw that.
But
okay.
Females having to be more selective are pickier.
Right.
Because you're only going to get to sire one guy's offspring this season anyway.
Okay.
So why not pick the best guy?
Right.
So you have to have some sort of inclination to look for things. So what they end up looking for is this red, it's called a snood, the gross thing that droops off of their nose.
Oh, yeah, that flap.
And you think, why would you want, that's not, you know.
What is that for?
You wouldn't think that would be a trap. What is it for? What's the purpose of it?
Right.
And what they found out is that in our, in the DNA.
Yep.
There just happens to be the gene that makes that red thing larger happens to be right next to a gene that makes for a very good immune system, and it's kind of latched on there. And so what happened is, way back when, a female just happened to have an inclination to there's some dude
that
like had a red spot on his nose or whatever, and her friends were like, are you crazy? He's a freak. And she's like, I think he's kind of cute, you know? And then her offspring just happened to inherit this hardy immune system. Her sons just happened to inherit this red dot from their father.
Yeah.
Her daughters just happened to inherit this preference for red dots and other turkeys that might have developed this thing. And then that keeps on going and going, and it's this kind of ratcheting effect.
Right.
And then it keeps on growing and getting larger over time, and the preference increases.
Because it's spread to it to some extent.
Yeah, but they don't have to know, oh, red dangly thing, that means this guy's going to fight off a cold really well.
Right.
They just have to have this instant. It's not really, they're not really doing there's not a lot of cognitive process actually happening.
And that's
it's just an instinct.
Evolutionary psychology.
And that's a lot of what our lives are.
And that's that's how humans are?
A lot of what we interpret as us
making
doing
choices
actions and making, consciousness stuff is very much just the tip of the iceberg. It's 5 to 10% of our thinking is being very generous.
Okay.
I mean, you don't think about breathing. You can think about breathing, but you don't, you know, you're
and
not thinking
God
about blood flowing and it would be too much to keep track of. You can't think about when you're first learning to walk and crawl, you kind of figure it out and your brain's doing a lot of work, but then everything becomes habit and kind of going through the motions.
So,
after a while.
5% is to some extent free will, and the rest of it's reactionary. It's just reaction.
Yeah, so a lot of for the most part. I don't mean
to get theological on you. I was just curious.
Yeah. I mean, depending on what context you're talking about and what
Scientific, but the scientific description of free will seems to be conscious decision making, right?
Right.
And free will. I mean, if you go crazy, weird Jesuit, you know, if you go deep into some rabbit hole of they're like, well, free will is really, there's fate, and then you can really just follow your fate or not follow your fate, and you can do it by free will or you can be forced to do it. And I was like, well, is that free? I mean, whatever. I'm going to have a different dork on for that conversation.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy.
No. I mean, I
don't really get it. Yeah.
This is I love conversations exactly like that. I mean, the way that I look at things from evolutionary psychology, biology, and this isn't all just instincts or nature versus nurture. It's nature plus nurture. There's all these things from the environment that interact with our genes and actually activate genes.
Right.
Depending on what's happening in the environment, certain genes will be activated certain times.
You mean like weather
It'll be like, there was this, a good example is there was this Dutch hunger winter or something like that. It was the Nazis,
cut off all the food or something.
Cut off all the food. And every.
Damn Nazis. Let's take a stand. I hate them.
Yeah. I, you know, bad rap. Come on.
We
learned a lot.
Oh, we did.
Great speaker, all that. During this Dutch hunger winter, and I think I'm getting this right, the name anyway, I know that I'm getting kind of the ideas behind this are correct. So they cut off this food supply to the Dutch, and what they found is that women in their third trimester that had children that survived through that winter, those people eventually had way higher rates of obesity and way higher rates of diabetes. And what happens in the fetal environment is it's getting all of this information from what's going on outside by, it's measuring like galactic or
the babies that live. How many calories am I getting? And had diabetes?
Yes. Later
because
in life.
Because of what they...
Because they learned, their genes learned in the womb, hey, there's not a lot of food out there. You better get everything you can, store it away as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, yeah.
Never stop eating.
right, because there's going to be a famine.
And don't just burn this stuff off. You want to be real thrifty with it. But then things reset and there was plenty of food out there.
Right.
But those genes had already been activated.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That is fascinating.
And then that can lead to another generation once you have diabetes. Just because of how, without getting into a whole bunch of biological jargon that I don't know enough about.
Fair enough.
there's diabetes can then lead mothers to not be able to get their fetuses enough of the same calories because of how diabetes works. And so that same thing will happen where their babies can be like, seemingly starved, even if their mother's eaten
all kinds of stuff. Feel of lack.
Yeah, because it's not actually getting to the fetus.
Interesting.
And then the same thing will happen again and again, and it can take a number of generations to even out.
Okay.
And they have found that in that one particular case. So yes, for an example, and
that's another. The thing is you know, the crazy thing about the Nazis is that they were constantly like, you know, if you don't have any morals, if you have no sense of right and wrong, and you're just like, people aren't people.
Yeah.
I don't need to treat this person as a life. You know, it's like lab rats, you know? That's not a life. That's just a rat.
Right, right.
I can do whatever I want. I can try to make his eyes blue. Let's see. Can you make people's eyes blue? No, you can't. Anyway, so, I only killed, 100 people doing it, you know? And so, they did all those experiments, and they're crazy, but the information that came out of it were fascinating to so many scientists that are like, sure glad I didn't do it, because they're all in hell, or they're all fucked, but I'm, you know, now we have all this weird information, because they did all that weird...
Oh, yeah, there's Nazi scientists that made amazing advances, and not just by experimenting. There were just, like, good scientists who just, by chance, happened to end up in
being
Germany
Nazis.
Becoming Nazis.
Right, right. I mean, there was a lot of funding for that kind of scientific experimentation as well.
I don't
to discuss it is weird. There's an amazing there's a science fiction trilogy by, it's one of my favorite books, really. It's by C.S. Lewis. It's the space trilogy. It's called Out of the Silent Planet, and the second one is Perelandra, and the third one is called That Hideous Strength. And it falls apart kind of in That Hideous Strength, except for That Hideous Strength all by itself is a weird exact, because he wrote it right during after World War II in Britain, C.S. Lewis did. And it's this study of scientific theory and how it has been taken too far. And it's very much a Nazi kind of fascist state where they're like, well, we're going to find out how things work, and we're going to dice, you know, how, like, people were against vivisection, and people were against invasive surgeries because they thought it was against God's will.
Oh,
and you're like, yeah, but we could actually fix that if we just cut that out. Like, see how you have that giant lump on you? Let's cut that out. See if your body just heals without it and doesn't grow a new one. Oh, that feels like God would want you to die anyway. Gonna do it anyway. Yeah. And so, I mean, there's like this weird line.
Right.
And in that Hideous Strength, the third book, there you could tell that C.S. Lewis leans a little bit towards, nah, people should just die. We shouldn't be cutting people up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know. It's a weird, you know, like, I'm glad that there's surgery, you know, but I don't know.
As someone who broke his
both feet,
I shattered one of my heels, and had they not done surgery on it, I probably would have never walked again.
Right, because on 1 foot.
I'm on 1 foot still.
So 1 foot is healed?
1 foot's totally healed. It was just a little crack, but okay. the other one was like shattered, and
oh wow,
and so. It wouldn't have healed correctly without setting the bones in place. And I mean, they just screwed them in. They just screwed pieces of bones together where they hoped my bones would be again one day.
Wow.
And then eventually stuff grew back together.
Holy hell.
So let's go back to free will for a second.
Sure.
This will be interesting to explain. So say you see someone playing sports or something like that. Well, they're going out and playing sports on their own volition.
Right.
Well, there's also a lot of things that you're sometimes advertising by showing off your athletic ability.
Right.
And much like a large peacock feather...
showing that you're fast advertise. And strong. And
the reason why it's showing that you're fast and strong is because they have to pay a heavy cost to lug this big thing around. It's horrible. It makes them stick out to predators. It makes them, it weighs them down so they can't fly as well.
Okay.
And because there's a cost there, it's an honest indicator of fitness. So, because otherwise you could cheat. Like, there's these male spiders.
Right.
That the females really like gifts. Weirdest thing. And so they'll bring them food or something like
right.
that. Males will bring food, and if it's a nice, big enough gift, you know, maybe they'll get laid.
Right.
But they'll wrap it in silk. Just nice little gift wrapping. But what a clever spider will do, and again, when I say that, I'm just talking about an instinct, is to wrap that food in way more silk than is actually necessary.
Oh,
maybe
to imply.
To imply that's a much larger gift than it actually is.
Yeah.
Maybe there's not even food in there. Maybe it's just a shell or a corpse or something. Then they give it to her, and while she's trying to rip, before she, you know, she's ripping into this thing,
right.
and he's going to pound town and be.
Pound town.
By the time she realizes it's a cubic zirconia, he's already out of there. So we have to look for these kind of honest indicators of
right.
fitness. And this isn't just regarding mating. This is regarding who we pick for peers and
right.
who we want to do business with and everything else.
You know, it's interesting that Andy, as always, my husband, mm-hmm. has talked about going back to get a PhD in the evolutionary psychology, I guess is what it would be, of rape.
Yeah.
And how it has... caused humanity to spread across the earth and how it is as you know the selection that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said
there's people that study that.
There are people who
oh yeah.
do. Okay.
Lots. I've talked
he
to
thought
some.
He thought he was onto something.
Oh no, it's a pretty well studied thing.
I'm sure it is now that I think about it. I'm going to go get you some more but talk about that like nature versus nurture or any of that.
Regarding rape?
Sure. Anything. Sorry.
Just tell a story. So I'll keep on talking about my basketball metaphor, and then maybe we can get back to rape. Before I always save rape until right before I'm gonna leave.
The weirdest thing is, like, 2 episodes there was some discussion of rape, and I have no idea why I keep bringing it up. I'm safe, you guys. It's okay.
you don't rape at the beginning and then hang out and have the conversation. It's just
right.
So say So say something that drives you or a male or females in humans, but male, like you mentioned, deer rutting earlier and bashing their heads in. I mean, those horns are all about that. They actually only have horns for mating season. They fall off after mating season.
Oh, do
They're only used for bashing each other. They get along fine all the rest of the year. And then when females are watching and fertile, all of a sudden they start bashing each other's heads in and you got to compete. And that could have been the foundation for a lot of sports and a lot of advertising how you're, the first Olympics were just kind of these things like, hey, we're not at war right now. Here's my battle skills. I can throw this javelin. I can wrestle really well, whatever it might be. And these gladiators, actually, if you go to Rome and take a tour of the Colosseum, which is amazing, they'll tell you that, a lot of the gladiators were slaves, but a lot of them were volunteers.
Were just guys.
Were just dudes just that wanted to show MMA. Off their gladiatoring skills.
Yes.
And then, and one of the big benefits is these, highfalutin, high valued females would often sneak down into area.
Just essentially just people groupies.
Yeah.
Gladiator groupies.
Yeah. There's gladiator groupies.
Why wouldn't there be? I suppose if you look at people and you're like, well, that is the Bamford does a joke about the sexiest monkey. And she's like, of course I want to know what Jennifer Aniston thinks about things. She's the sexiest monkey and she knows where all the bananas are being kept.
Absolutely.
Okay. So reaction.
And that's very much for, so from a sociological perspective, the reason why women are watching these gossip magazines is because they've been brainwashed by society and their parents painted their rooms pink and everything. Mm-hmm. But from an evolutionary psychology perspective, and again, there's a whole web of causation behind everything. And so
no one in evolutionary psychology
is saying it's this one thing doing everything. No one's saying that. It's just, hey, look at this all other cause that can happen. And from that effect, the reason why females might be into gossip magazines or whatever, or even makeup or anything else, is because they were gatherers and they were kind of had to work as a group and were more in tune with what was going on socially than men going out and hunting and trying to be the guy that gets the big kill and is much more competitive.
Right.
Thanks. So then you fast forward and you go, oh, well, hey, I'm going to go and play basketball right now. That's my own free will. But why do I have the instinct to want to go? And I do a joke in my mating season special about this, like, because it's just true. I remember playing basketball and we'd be tired and like shooting around and not taking things seriously. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden a few girls would come walking by with short shorts and all of a sudden everyone's doing Harlem Globetrotter stuff. And
Right.
And is that
it
free will?
It raises the stakes, yeah.
I don't know.
Stakes raised
it
instinctively?
It depends on what you consider free will. I mean, right now, one of the things that humans can do to advertise our fitness is to advertise how healthy our brains are. Brains are a very difficult thing to keep healthy and to stay healthy. They're a difficult thing. You have to like study. You have to learn things. If you want to advertise, you have to impose this cost. Brains are susceptible to parasites and diseases and stuff like that. So a good way to advertise your health is to advertise your intelligence.
Okay.
And if you want to advertise your intelligence, you need to be doing that in this kind of showier way. Oh, look how many books I've read. Look how many. You've imposed this cost on yourself, just like that peacock feather.
Right.
And now you're advertising it for people. So
that's wild.
You know, is this my free will right now to be trying to be on this show called Dork Forest?
Sure, the Dork Forest. You're letting some dorky people know that you got some info.
Yeah. You know, so I don't know.
Are there studies to try to make, well, okay, two questions really. One is, you know how they're advertising all the time is keep your brain elastic.
Yeah.
You know, there's all those there's puzzles and they're like, oh, you gotta take this vitamin because then your brain stays all spongy and you can remember shit. And then I don't know what.
Yeah, that's more of an environmental influence, but certainly evolution still conditioned the brain to to be in humans. Evolution has seemingly equipped us with a wide range of tools that we can use and are sometimes activated in different environments. And I think what you're talking about is how parts of the brain can atrophy. It's a use it or lose it kind of. And in neuroscience, which I'm also way into neuroscience, but I don't know nearly enough about.
Right.
That definitely seems to be a lot of the case, is a use it or lose it kind of thing. But you can get it back. There's like I was just reading an audiobook, The Brain That Changes Itself. I just started a few chapters in, and they were talking about helping the elderly walk. What they're doing is having them walk barefoot more, and so what they've realized from MRIs is that the part of the brain that that is monopolized in using your feet, which one is much smaller than your hands because it takes a lot more brain work to manipulate digits and everything.
Okay.
So like there's a body map in your brain.
Yeah.
And the hand is a very large part of this body map.
Okay.
And the foot isn't as big, but the thinking is that our shoes are desensitizing our feet to a lot of sensory information, and it's using the same kind of use it or lose it principle, where the foot in your brain map is kind of shrinking and atrophying and not more stimulation,
right? You're like, take off your shoe
again.
And sock, walk around barefoot, your brain could relearn that's what your feet are.
Right.
Those are what your feet are for.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It's have you ever heard Stephen Wright's joke about MRI? It's my favorite Stephen Wright joke. It's, I'm getting an MRI tomorrow to find out if I'm claustrophobic. Which is the greatest MRI joke I've ever heard in my life.
Stephen Wright, ladies and gentlemen.
And but okay, so now are there studies that they're doing now to try to force sort of to force our brain, like, because what I feel like with all the advertising, they're like, play puzzles, take off your shoes, take these vitamins. They're trying to create evolutionary psychology, right? They're trying to shape it.
Yeah, I mean,
is there a field of that?
So many generations. Evolution actually, depending on who you talk to, can work quicker than what we originally thought. Take lactose tolerance, for instance.
Yeah.
95% of the population was lactose intolerant 8,000 years ago. And then we figured out how to, whatever weirdo figured out to suck on these cow teats.
Right, how to make it work.
And whatever benefit that it had, if that helped survive in lean times, if it got some sort of vitamins that helped at that time, maybe it was a sexual selection thing. Maybe if this milk stuff was making you gassy, females didn't want to be around you or something like that.
So the genes changed so that it didn't make you gassy kind of thing?
Yeah, okay. Now 95% of people are lactose tolerant.
Right.
So in 8,000 years, and that's, we're just talking about milk.
Right. Well, 8,000 years later.
In 8,000 years, milk has had a pretty enormous impact on our genes.
Yeah.
So little things can change. And there's like... there's some like owl moth thing in London, and there's black ones and there's white ones, and there was like 5% black ones and 95% white ones, and then London got highly polluted and a lot of their buildings were becoming darker.
Yeah.
And then the black ones camouflaged in more to some of these buildings from predators, birds, I imagine. And so then 95% of them were black.
And
then but then they cleaned up the city.
Okay.
And then it went back again.
Weird.
Yeah.
Just like in the course of like 50 years to 100 years.
Well, Yeah, something like that. But you have to think about it as generations.
Yeah.
So a moth generation is you know, a human generation is 25 years, something like that.
A moth generation is like a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
A few weeks. So.
Which that's a whole other thing with like how we interpret this idea of a lifespan and how we interpret time and
the
relativity of it all. And I mean, imagine like a mayfly's life where it's like these guys have 4 days and it's like, I'm sure they wish they had 5 days. That'd be great. But if you're like, okay, we'll give you 15 days. They're like, what?
I don't want to be immortal.
Yeah. It's like, I want to live 100 years. I don't want to live 1,000 years
Yeah, that's exactly
But to them, it's still a lifespan.
It would be another quarter of their life, you know?
Right.
I mean, if you think about it, you're going to live 80 years or you're going to live 160 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, wow, 160. What would I be like 160 years from now?
Or even 500 years, then it's like, people are sick of my stand-up. I'm moving back in with my parents when I'm 250.
You got to keep writing, Shane. You got to keep writing. That's the Shane Moss, ladies and gentlemen. Always writing.
500 years of... It doesn't matter how much I...
Maybe you start writing novels.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm comfortable with the 80 to 90.
Are you? It's funny.
We talked about this when I had you guys on my old podcast.
Right,
we talked
about Andy
transhumanism on.
What define transhumanism? Because I don't remember what the hell that is. What do we call
it? It's just the idea of advancing humanity through technology and, you know, uploading our brains into computers.
Oh, that's right. And living forever in a computer and then moving from body to body.
I think we talked a little bit about that.
Yeah. Probably.
That was when I was like, I want to do your podcast. I remember thinking that when you let me talk about robots and most people yell at me
and
for
say,
talking
stop
about
talking
robots.
About robots. No, I say own the robot love. What the heck? It's nothing wrong with robots. And but I heard something
wrong with robots.
I'm a liberal.
There's something.
There's something at South by Southwest this week. I heard on NPR that some people are working on. They're like desperate to interact with technology. They're like, when are we going to be able to like replace my eye with an eye that'll see further and better and all this stuff? Mm. A perfectly healthy eye, by the way.
Yeah.
They want to pop it out, pop in a new eye that's got a telephoto lens. And you're like, and they would do that by choice.
Yeah.
That sounds, insane to me.
I don't know.
But other people are like, yeah, let's do this. It's because that would be super fun. Like, I was like, well, do you want to have your legs lopped off so you can get faster legs? That would be the next thing, right?
However, as someone who almost lost his foot. I really, even actually just recently, they did a surgery in January. I had a bone infection, and that was another possibility.
That they were going to lop your foot off?
I mean, it was probably a small possibility.
But now things are going good.
It's something I thought about a lot. And right. And I would love to have a robot foot rather than not have a foot.
Well, exactly. But if you were
to take a perfectly healthy thing, that would be another step.
Right. And
but I mean, you're drinking coffee right now.
Yep.
That's hacking your natural
right. And 100 years from now, replacing your leg with a better leg because your leg is just okay, might be just like getting a tattoo.
I mean, our biology is just so slow to catch up to. I mean, speaking of generations again, this is. I mean, if we really committed to like, we're going to change this about ourselves, say the rape that was brought up, or so we're going to change that part of our genes naturally through like sexual selection.
Or I mean, would it be sexual selection? Would it be operational? I mean, they you know how they talk about they try to they take like pedophiles and stuff, and they're like, we have to figure out a way to chemically dampen that part of their genes, dampen that part of their DNA, so that they no longer want to hurt people or whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I know that there are studies of that.
Yeah, I mean.
It's such a weird, like, I don't, there's Grammication over here is a big, which is me.
Yeah.
And that's how I refer to myself whenever I have some sort of weird old lady idea, which is I think that if it's not broken, you shouldn't fuck with it, right?
Yeah.
I'm just like, it's.
Well, those people are broken.
Those people are broken.
Yeah.
But you, I could. Which I would love for them to be fixed, but I also think that the technology, the science that it would take to get them to be fixed could also be misused. Maybe I read too much science fiction, but I'm just like, someone's going to use that.
Misusing stuff, yeah.
Yeah, they're going to misuse that kind of power and that kind of technology. I mean,
What if they turn us all into pedophiles? They switch it the other way.
You think about how little power somebody has and how they misuse it, right?
Yeah.
Like, Bill Cosby, for no reason, except for that, you know, the guy has... I mean, these were women, from the most part, from everything that I've read, these were women that would have slept with him anyway.
No.
But he was married, so possibly intellectually, psychologically, he thought to himself, well, maybe I'm not cheating on my wife if this is an inanimate object.
I have no idea what
he was thinking. But these were women who would have probably fucked him.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, no, I can't do it that way. That's not how they have to be knocked out, but still breathing. I don't want to sleep. You know, he didn't want to sleep with a doll, or he didn't want to just get a fleshlight or some creepy, you know.
Yeah.
It's just so, and you just wonder, that guy didn't have that much power. He had some power. He had enough power that he made, you know, $12 million a year and he could fly around the world. But it's just the abuse of that power.
Yeah.
For no reason, as far as I can tell. Right?
Yeah, yeah. For some, I don't know. I think that there's probably something just off, and maybe that was what he was attracted. Maybe it wasn't that it was like him getting away with or validating it to himself. Maybe he was actually attracted to
just people lying there breathing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or maybe, who knows? Maybe he's into like. Maybe he's fantasizing about banging dead people or something like that.
Right, and he thought that was bad.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this stuff can go wrong, you know, and our brains are just this
they're very sensitive.
Incredibly complex thing.
They are. But I think about like the creation of scientific things that could dampen certain DNA strands or certain gene pools and how that could be used just, you know. I mean, there was. Do you ever see an old?
I mean, it could also be. Sorry.
No good. No, please.
I mean, I think that you could also change things to. It wouldn't all have to be necessarily evil. You could change things to be like
the better.
I don't want to hit puberty and have this. Raging boner that I am running around until I actually want to have children, because that's the purpose of sex is to have kids. I mean, we have sex for all sorts of reasons now.
Super fun sex, no reason not to have sex.
But the origins of sex were clearly for procreation. And I mean, to me. If evolution were to switch our genes and change them, or like you said, if we were to go in and to manipulate things to be more in line with our conscious desires, then what you would do is maybe hit puberty at like 30. So you go through school, you get your job, you find yourself, you figure things out,
right.
You have some failed relationships, and then, oh, okay, I get life now.
Whatever
date you have in mind that you want to start having kids, just switch the puberty switch on there rather than having to wrestle with this. Maybe getting STDs, maybe pregnancy scares, and all of this other stuff.
And you know what? Now that you say it, there's any number of science fiction books that have that as an option.
Really?
Where there's used for good. I mean, there's the one that I'm thinking of course, is a book I've mentioned many times on the Dork Forest. It is space opera, so it's cheeseball, super fun, but it's got some great.
I need to start reading sci-fi, because I never do, and I really want to.
Well,
I didn't understand
science.
The value of it. until recently, and now I'm starting to.
What do you feel is the value to it from afar, from what you're looking at?
I think it opens up a lot of philosophical ideas.
Yes. Yes, it sure does. I mean, because you mostly read nonfiction, right?
I read strictly nonfiction.
Exclusively.
And my brain's always been very like, I want these concrete answers. What the fuck is going on?
Yeah,
I want to know.
Yeah.
But now knowing, I'm now at a point where some of this stuff that I'm trying to learn is so philosophical.
And speculative.
And speculative.
That speculative fiction might be, might be good
I really
you.
Think so. I've had some conversations just like this with numerous people lately.
There's the woman, it's Lois McMaster-Bujold. She's been on the show. I was a bit of a, I just dorked out at her, quite honestly.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and she wrote.
Isn't it amazing our jobs? We get to have these amazing connections
it's
like this.
It's all the internet.
I became obsessed with this one rapper recently, Del the Funky Homo Sapien.
Yeah.
And then I just started, he did this Deltron 3030, which. Is the dorkiest rap imaginable. It's set in the year 3030.
Yeah.
And it's like him as a superhero fighting. Oh. It's like very Orwellian and stuff, fighting like corporate corruption and and they've enslaved all the people and everything. You'd probably be into it.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
But I started like contacting
What's
him
his name
on
again?
Twitter. Del the Funky Homo Sapien, but Deltron 3030 was these two concept albums
he
made
with
this premise. And he's a brilliant guy.
And you got to meet him?
Yeah, I got to meet him. I started following him on Twitter and like sending him messages and stuff. And it's like, God, if I wasn't a comedian, I'd never get to, it's crazy what we.
It is crazy. And it's crazy. Even if you aren't a comedian, you could just talk to people on Twitter and sometimes they just talk back to you.
Yeah.
Where you're like, I've had people say, I can't believe you responded to me. And I said, oh, this is an attainable goal, my friend. Talking to Jackie Cation, attainable goal. Yeah. But it's weird who thinks that. Like Clark Gregg, the guy who plays the Phil Coulson on the Avengers movies.
Yeah.
And he's in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That guy, he's like, oh, hey, how's it going? And you're like, no, you're a famous person. I can't believe you're talking to me. And he's like, yeah, I don't feel so famous. I'm just working for a living over here. And that's
plus
the whole
we're
thing.
Just sitting around and checking our phones and stuff. Oh, all, someone's talking at me.
What are you doing? Right. As long as you're not weird or horrible, there's no reason not to talk to you, right? What the hell? So, all right. So we're almost at an hour.
Okay.
Which is crazy. And so let's make sure that I say Shane Moss, ladies and gentlemen, at Shane Comedy on Twitter, ShaneMoss.com.
Yes.
The Netflix special called Mating Season. And ShaneMoss.com has all your dates, right, for when you're on the road and where you're doing stand-up and stuff. Are you doing the road with this foot?
Yeah. Well, I took 3 months off originally when both of my feet were broken.
Yeah, that's probably the way to go.
Then I...
That might be financially terrifying.
It was bad.
Yeah.
And then I spent 3 or 4 months on the road. I put together an act about it.
Yeah. And you're like, let's just do it.
And then I was getting ready to record, and then I found out that I got a bone infection, needed a second surgery, and so and then I needed to take another 7 weeks off of work. I was on IV antibiotics and all of this stuff.
Wow.
But now I'm ready.
Now you're back.
Record
so ShaneMoss.com has info.
Yeah.
And then your podcast, Here We Are.
Yeah.
People should listen to that on iTunes are you on a network? Should we plug some sort of network? You're just a guy?
Yeah, just a guy
doing a podcast.
I was on a network before, and I was like, I'm going to just, like, I don't know what I'm doing with this, so I'm going to just, like, figure it out on my own.
Just do it by yourself until you know.
Yeah.
Well, let me just say this, Shane Moss. It's been fascinating.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah,
thanks for having me on. You're always a delight to be around.
Aw, very sweet. And what I say is people, get out there. Get out there and think about your own psychological problems and psychological problems, psychological evolution.
Think about your mind. Think about how it came into being and why you think the way you think and why others do as well.
Excellent. Tune in next time, folks, because every week, super fun. So thanks for listening. Take care out there.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?